I'm Jonathan Green. You're listening to Lost and Found. And this week...
Bonjour, Jonathan. Fancy seeing you here.
Amanda Smith, presenter of Sporty on RN. I haven't seen you since, well, in the office before lockdown.
Yeah, well, I was getting sick of being stuck at home, so I decided to take a leaf out of your book and go on a journey of the mind.
Oh, how exciting. Well, here we both are. Beginning in the French city of Nice, the starting place of this year's Tour de France.
When I was young, I was in France doing the Tour de France, you know, for about 20 years.
Gabriel Gatté, chef, cookbook author, recipient of the Order of Agricultural Merit from the Republic of France.
And I've seen it several times on the side of the road. It's quite a festival. It's very exciting. Since I have been in Australia, which is now over 40 years, I have been there for my work with SBS in the past before, so we would pre-record the segments, but I've never been able to be there during the Tour de France. I was going to be there this year. I had planned to go on the Champs-Élysées, but this year is different.
This year is different. Sadly, that is true. It must be... I mean, a wonderful draw card, a beautiful thing for regional economies in France.
Absolutely. First, the region, they really embrace it. To start with, they've got to adjust the road system so the riders can go. They remove sometimes some street furniture. They every village that it goes through, they would have a little bit of a festival on that day. There would be people selling food outside. It is in July, so it is very, it's the holiday time. It's like if something in Australia was in January. So it is really festive. People are relaxed. The weather is lovely. People love it.
And a great opportunity for those villages, for those regions to show off.
Absolutely.
Their special food, their special produce.
Yes. And the French Tourist Bureau has always said, and they have told me in the past, that the Tour de France is the most incredible things to show off the beauty of France and its regions.
Amanda, what do you think we should do first?
How about we have something to eat?
From what I know, you are a bon vivant, so you would enjoy some good food. Well, to start with, this year the tour is mostly in the southern part of France. When we talk about north and south in terms of France, we talk usually north of the Loire, which crosses France practically in the middle, and south of the Loire. So this year it's like 90% south. And it is where there's more sunshine. It is very rural. Especially where the tour goes, it goes into those countryside roads. It avoids the main roads. Mm. And there's lots of farms. There's lots of agriculture. And the farmers and the country people, they like to preserve food. And one way that is quite not unique now anymore, but used to be unique to France, is the terrine. The terrine is... in Australia, we would call it a meatloaf. But in France, it's a lot more complex. Sometimes it is made with different kind of meats. It's always made with the offcuts of meats, the ones that are very tasty, but that would not be used as a steak. And the local people and the special shops, they make terrine layers by layers. They might put a little bit of pork, a little bit of duck. Then they would put some chicken liver pate, and then they cook that together in the bain-marie, in the oven. The bain-marie is a roasting tray with a bit of water. They cook that slowly so it doesn't dry, and it comes out into a loaf that is sophisticated, that is super delicious because they know what they are doing, and that you can keep for practically 2 or 3 weeks. So it is festive. You can slice it. You can have it with bread. It's a good snack for the Tour de France, actually.
A perfect thing to have, at the roadside to feed those eager crowds.
Yes, in the baguette, put a few slices of that in the baguette with a little bottle of red wine on the side.
And each region, I suspect, must have varieties in their terrine. These must change from place to place.
completely in the southwest, where the tour actually is getting to, towards that, this week, it is dark. Dark is the big thing. And dark in France is really, it's a very sophisticated meat. Everything is used. Sometimes a dark is deboned completely. So you remove the bone and you have got, like a big square of duck, basically, with the skin underneath. And that is put into a terrine mold. And then it is filled, the skin is filled with goodies. And then the skin is closed. So basically you have a terrine, it's called a ballotine. You have a terrine that is made with a whole duck. So pork, of course, is the most common one, but you can have pigeon, you can have game food, you can have wild boar, you can have all kind of terrines. And interestingly, the terrine is the name of the dish finish, but it is also the name of the container in which the dish is cooked.
Uh-huh.
So, and terrine comes from the word terre, which means earth. So it was made of earth, of course, of clay or something like that. And they have been around France for 100s and 100s of years, possibly 1,000 years.
This terrine is delicious.
Yummy with the baguette.
So I guess we'll just hang out here till the peloton comes through.
Yeah, well, what a lovely way to spend time.
Oh, here they come.
In cycling, there's everybody wears a kit for their team or whatever, the jerseys and shorts that represent their country if they're racing internationally.
Chris Sidwell's cycling expert, the author of Cycling Jerseys, Iconic Designs and the Stories That Made Them.
Or their cycling club, or their sponsors if they're in a professional team. But cycling has an added layer to that. It has jerseys that denote winners or leaders of competitions because there's races, the pelotons, upwards of 200 people.
Hmm.
It's hard to pick out who's leading a stage race. So it has leaders' jerseys in stage races. It has national champions' jerseys, so you can see who is the national champion of Belgium or France or whatever in the peloton. And it has the world champions' jersey, the rainbow jersey, that the world champion in each different discipline can wear in that discipline.
Is that a thing which was always the case, or has this evolved in cycling?
No, it evolved, and the Tour of France was the leader in this evolution. The races started in 1903, and by 1919, the people who were watching it were saying, we don't know, we know who's leading that stage, because it's a stage race.
Mm.
You don't go all the way around France in one go, although that was the original plan. In 1903, when they were planning, but they realised that they'd most likely kill somebody, so it was split into five or six stages for the first one. So you could see who was leading the stage, but you can't see who's leading overall. And the overall winner of a stage race is the person who does the route in the shortest time. Now, they might not win every stage, but it's like any race, it's who wins in the shortest time. So in 1919, the founder of the Tour de France, Henri Desgrange, was looking for something to denote the leader, and he decided that it would be a yellow jersey that he would give the leader of the Tour de France.
Of course, over time, and this race has such a long history, the design, the materials of these jerseys would have changed dramatically.
Yes, I mean, it was wool in the first days, and quite bulky wool, because the stages were much longer than they are now, and they very often started at night and finished at night. And wool prevailed, merino wool, getting finer and finer and finer for a long time, because it wick, what they call wick sweat. It takes the sweat away from your body, so you don't get all clammy like you would in cotton. But since the late 1970s and through the 80s, Lycra and man-made fibres have replaced wool. And now we find that jerseys are not only designed to denote leaders of competitions or the team colours and represent the companies that sponsor the races, but they have become aerodynamic. There are big gains for having aerodynamic clothing. The skin suit that people were in time trials and track riders were, is a really technical piece of equipment now that's just designed in a by computers, looking at wind tunnels and all sorts of things. There's a fantastic amount of technology in cycle clothing now.
It must come at a pretty price, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of these original things, I know, I'll not name the team, it's supposed to be a secret, but I know that one country's Olympic team paid £20,000 a piece for the skin suits that were individually made for each competitor.
The peloton's getting away. We've got to keep up if we want to see the rest of this race. Here, take this bike.
Oh, where'd you get that?
Magic of radio.
Ah, of course. Allez, allez! Because it's not just the design, the materials around the clothing that's changed over time. I mean, the most fundamental item of kit here, the bike itself. I mean, in shorthand, how has that evolved?
It's evolved a lot. I mean, the first bikes in the Tour of France probably weighed 20 kilograms, you know, 44 pounds. Now they have to put a limit on it, and I think it's 6.8 or 7 kilograms. And the manufacturers could make them lighter than that and still be safe. Hmm. The original materials were steel, carbon fiber. Aluminium came in for a while. Carbon fiber is the material now. And actually, bikes would possibly be different shapes now if it wasn't for the governing body of cycling, the UCI, because we had a period in the 1990s with Chris Boardman, for example, riding this Lotus bike, where you had monocoque frames that were all sorts of different shapes, not the two triangles that you see today. But because bikes were starting to look less like bikes, the UCI, the governing body, decided to preserve the aesthetic of cycling and say that you can't have these monocoque designs. You can have carbon fiber, you can have variations of it, but there must be a bike, two triangles, the main tubes and the back end, pair of forks at the front, just like it was when cycling started in 1865, I believe.
Isn't that interesting? Because, as you say, the technology would afford all sorts of possibilities in design. But to say, no, we are racing bikes. This is what a bike looks like.
We're racing bikes, yes. And actually, perhaps I'm old-fashioned, but I quite applaud that. I like it.
Well, the caravans are booked out. Looks like we're going to have to cycle up ourselves.
What? Up the mountains?
Yes, come on, I'll race you. What are you, chicken?
No, I'm just full of terrine. Duck terrine. God, she's getting away.
Well, the reason there are so many people normally lining the road, especially the mountainside, is because it's summertime in France.
Mike Tomalaris, sports journalist, host of this year's Tour de France broadcast on SBS.
It's July. There are people not only from France that are taking in the tour as part of their holiday. They come from all over Europe, all over Australia, all over North America, in fact, all over everywhere. And when I say 1 million people on top of a mountain range, I'm not exaggerating at all. A lot of them hire camper vans. In fact, it might be a good idea to buy some shares in campers in Europe, because you cannot buy or find a camper van for love or money in July. They're all occupied.
Come on, Jonathan, you cycle all the time.
but it's not so hilly where I'm from. Plus, you literally present a show called Sporty. You're doing sporty things all the time.
Yes, but as I say, you don't have to get sport to get sporty.
I see what you did there.
Mesdames et messieurs, le vainqueur du Tour de France de cette année, Monsieur Guillaume Coppé!
Beat you to the top. I'm king of the mountains. Polka dots suit me.
There are polka dots, yeah. We've got a mountains classification, which is the points are awarded at the top of designated hill climbs for the highest mountains, the hardest, over 2,000 metres. They get the most points. So there was always a competition right from the early days for a king of the mountains. But in 1975, they decided to show who was leading, and a polka dot jersey was chosen.
Mm-hmm. Gabrielle, having sampled our tureen with our baguette, I'm feeling in the need for cheese.
Oh, well, you came to the right country. France is very lucky. We have got lots of different terroirs and one cheese that is quite exceptional because it's quite unique in flavor and it's such a big name in the great variety of cheese. That's the Roquefort. The Roquefort is a blue cheese. It's made with ewe's milk. It's not a cow's milk. It's made with ewes. And it is in the center of France, in a very rugged region where there's lots of rock. And that's why it's called Roquefort. Roquefort is actually the name of the village in which the cheese was created and made. It's only made in that region. It's actually a very regional cheese. You cannot make Roquefort anywhere else, maybe within 50 kilometers. And it's very rugged and it is full of caves that have been there for a long, long time. And 2,000 years ago, there's records of cheese being made like that 2,000 years ago. They used to go in those caves during the winter months when it was very, the weather was very difficult, and they would make their cheese in the cave, and it was a good used meat cheese. And then they would eat, they would make some kind of bread, and one piece of bread was left in the cave and it became moldy, and that's affected the cheese. And that's how the first Roquefort was made. It is a mold. Of course, cheese is a living product, and it is because of molds that cheese gets their flavor. And it has become one of the great, great French cheeses. Every cheese shop in France would have Roquefort. You could not have a cheese shop without Roquefort. You know, it would be unthinkable. And it is a bitey cheese. When it is very well made, it is creamy. It is, it is something that some people might drink with port. Certainly a red wine because it is solid. Some bread, maybe some walnut. It is also used very much in cooking in salads. Roquefort and walnut salad with endive is an absolute classic. So you know the endives is the salad leaves that you. You wash, you put in, in a bowl, you break some pieces of Roquefort, you put some walnuts, you make a really light dressing with that. And it is really the Roquefort and walnut salad is one of the most delightful salads. Sometimes it is served with slivers of pears if it is in season. And it is just, it can be a cheese dish, you know, a cheese salad rather than just a cheese platter.
I think we have there our perfect Tour de France trackside lunch. So you're king of the mountains, but I'm faster over the flats, wouldn't you say? A green jersey.
Perfect for you. Why not? There's a classification for everything these days.
Everyone's a winner.
Yes, there's a green jersey because there was more flat stages than mountain stages. The sprinters tend to win the points competition. And in 1953, when it was inaugurated, it was given as something for riders who can't really climb mountains but win a lot of stages to go for overall. The first sponsor of that competition in 1953 was a lawnmower manufacturer, because cycling is a mix of tradition and inspiration and the needs of sponsors. And their main logo, their company colour, was green. So it became the green jersey. And it's been the green jersey ever since, apart from one year, 1968, when the green jersey became red because the soft drink manufacturer, Cida Soda, their colour was red. So it was one year it was red.
Pass the Roquefort.
Oh, here you go.
Wow, this is so much nicer than an Australian winter.
Journeys of the mind, Amanda. Journeys of the mind. How have organisers and the French people, how have they accommodated a tour in a pandemic?
Well, that's very interesting, and I'm very surprised, as a matter of fact, that the crowds are still lining the stages, the start and finish. From what I can tell, looking at the monitor, sure, a lot of the spectators are wearing face masks, But I've got to say, social distancing is not being observed from what I've seen. They're not 1.5 metres apart. In fact, they're not 1.5 centimetres apart, as far as I can tell. They're just clambering over each other with their phones, taking pictures. So I think it's a real concern. And I'm really curious to see what happens on the first rest day, because I'm under the impression that a lot of COVID tests will be conducted. Mm. The riders, the teams, the mechanics, the soigneurs, and everybody linked with the race is living in a bubble right now. And let's hope there aren't any positive returns, because this race could shut down almost immediately on the first rest day.
Hey, look, Jonathan, we're coming up to the Champs-Élysées.
Oh, that over there, that'll be the finish line. Looks like we're near the end of our adventure.
How shall we celebrate?
More food. Gabrielle?
Well, you know what, yes. I was thinking of a soufflé, because the soufflé is a dessert that is so French, and it's magnificent. At the end of a big meal, you are served a soufflé. It is festive when it comes. It is very light. It is, you know, when you open your soufflé, you get the perfume, the taste of the soufflé coming into your nose. And one that is really perhaps the most popular soufflé in France is the Grand Marnier soufflé. Grand Marnier, the liqueur is made just outside Paris. And the soufflé, it is believed, was created by a chef called Vincent Lachapelle. In the 1700s for Madame de Pompadour. Madame de Pompadour was the chief mistress, Jonathan, not just the mistress.
Chief mistress
of Louis XV. Everyone had lots of respect for her, and she had good taste. She was educated. She was creative, and she always employed very good chefs for herself. And at some stage, a chef developed something with beaten egg whites and mixed with, with a custard, with a white sauce flavored. And the soufflé was created. So it is really, nowadays, it's almost more than 300 years old. And the Grand Marnier soufflé is perhaps... it's festive.
A fine tradition. The souffle, look, people are intimidated by them. What's the secret to souffle success?
Well, I have made many, and I think that first you need to beat the egg whites very well, because that's what will carry the souffle. What I do myself when I beat the egg whites, you know, like I have a recipe where that is very simple, where I put four egg whites in a mixing bowl, in one of those kitchenette kind of thing, with just a teaspoon of sugar and a pinch of cream of tartar, and I beat that until it is stiff peak. And when it is looking really snowy, I add a bit more sugar, and I beat a bit more, and that becomes really firm, and you can see that it is solid, it is smooth. And then to that, I mix, for the Grand Marnier soufflé, I mix some four egg yolks that I beat with the grated zest of one orange and 5 millimeters of Grand Marnier. We whisk that together, and then I fold that egg yolk Grand Marnier preparation into the egg whites. And then I pour the egg whites into some prepared soufflé mold. Prepared means that they have been brushed with butter and sugared, and then cook that in the oven. And that recipe really works very well, very well.
I feel entirely confident in your hands, Gabrielle. Thank you. Thank
you. It works better when you have done it a few times.
Yeah, well, be prepared to learn from your failures.
Well, that's right. Practice makes perfect, for sure.
Well, there you go. You even have a recipe to take home as a souvenir. You've been listening to Lost and Found, this time on the Tour de France. You heard from Chris Sidwalls, Gabrielle Gatté, and Mike Tomolaris.
And me, Amanda Smith.
Producers are Mira Adler-Gillies and Lisa DeVissi. Technical production by Brendan O'Neill. I'm Jonathan Green.
How was that? I wanted to call you Jonathan Vare at some point, but I forgot.
Opportunity squandered. Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.